This is Upstate's HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen here with you. There are many conflicting theories that have been written about parenting in the last few years, from the strict tiger mom philosophy to the more permissive and potentially intrusive helicopter parenting style. So what's a parent to do? Well, here with some answers is Dr. Alicia Pekarsky. She's Assistant Professor of Pediatrics at Upstate Medical University. Dr. Pekarsky is also a board-certified child abuse pediatrician, as well as a general pediatrician at Upstate Golisano's Children's Hospital, McMahon Ryan Child Advocacy Center, as well as University Pediatric and Adolescent Center. Welcome, Dr. Pekarsky. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
So parenting, to my mind and in my own life experience, is perhaps one of the most challenging jobs that there is, and yet kids don't come with any instructions. There's no manual. There's no real training. And there's lots of conflicting schools of thought. So wherein lies the answer? I mean, in your mind, what's the central concept about what is the role of a parent?
Well, I agree, first of all. I think that I have three young children. I think that parenting is the most difficult job that I do. And I view my role and other parents' role in children's lives is to teach them about the outside world, to help them nurture relationships with people, both their peers and also adults, and also just make them feel safe when they explore the world. Clearly, their basic needs need to be met also. They need to get to school, they need to be fed, and they need to have a safe place to be.
And it strikes me also that this whole notion of socializing kids or helping them to understand what are the rules for how to get along with people, much like you said, encouraging relationships, really does start at home.
Absolutely.
And in that primary relationship with a parent. But how about helping a child learn to value themselves and their own selfhood and dignity? Do you think that's an important piece of parenting as well?
It's extremely important. I think them developing a good self-esteem and ability to relate to other people in the first few years of life actually impacts them throughout the rest of their lives.
So the stickiest part of all of this that you hear over and over again is discipline. You know, it's kind of where the rubber meets the road. How do you get what could be an unruly child or a child who wants to do their own thing, especially once they get to that so-called terrible two stage where they think they know everything and they want to do everything. I mean, discipline seems to me to often be, as I said, where the rubber meets the road. What do you think about issues of corporal punishment? We call corporal punishment spanking, physical punishment. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it's interesting because you brought up two concepts that are very related, all in the same sentence, discipline versus corporal punishment, and there is a big difference. Corporal punishment, I think, has a lot of negative ramifications, and as a pediatrician, as well as a child abuse pediatrician, we strongly discourage using corporal punishment, and I think it's something that we've thought for a long time, but has been studied a lot more recently, and in the past couple of years, there's been a number of good publications indicating.
So people have actually done real studies to look at the effects of physical punishment
they
on
have.
Kids.
Yep, there's been a lot of studies. And one of the best studies that I've read is a study that was published by Ferguson et al. Last year that confirmed that spanking and other forms of corporal punishment are ineffective, and they have lots of negative ramifications.
So what does it end up teaching a kid ultimately? Does it teach them to be aggressive as opposed to
It does.
Behave?
Yeah. The kids who are victims of corporal punishment tend to be more aggressive in childhood. They have antisocial behaviors. They have poor mental health. And when they grow up, they also tend to be more likely to abuse their own children and be in relationships where there's domestic violence. They've also studied some negative, quote-unquote, medical health effects of kids who are victims of corporal punishment. They have that's an increased risk factor when you have an adverse childhood experience like that, to have things like obesity, cancer, heart disease, all the big things that we're worried about these days.
So it has medical ramifications, health ramifications
exactly.
as well. So what does New York State say about this? I know that it's been in the news lately, that whole NFL thing with Adrian Peterson using a switch to so-called discipline his child. I mean, is it illegal in New York State?
That's a great question, because I'm asked that a lot, and it does vary from state to state, so it's important for us to know what's going on in New York State. In New York State, corporal punishment actually is allowed in homes, and in some cases in private schools, but it can be considered excessive if the child has marks on their body or if the parent uses something to inflict an injury.
Such as that switch
idea? Such as the switch or using any actual implement to hit a child. The thing that's allowed legally is for a parent to use an open hand to spank on the body and not leave a mark. That's what's considered legal.
But in fact, what you just said in advance of that is, despite its legality in some settings, it's clearly not advisable.
Absolutely not advisable.
So what's the bottom line here? I mean, what kind of discipline does a conscientious, compassionate parent do to coax good behavior? Especially, you know, you have these immature little humans who are still developing mm-hmm. their ability to control themselves, and they're completely capable of driving you crazy.
Absolutely.
So the question is, how do you go about encouraging this positive behavior?
So we look at positive discipline, and it's really an approach to teaching children that helps them to succeed, that gives them information, and it also supports their development and their growth.
So when you say positive discipline, is it part of this whole idea of positive parenting kind of wrapped together?
It is. I think discipline is probably one of the biggest things that goes with parenting, and they go together.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with Upstate pediatrician Dr. Alicia Pekarsky. We're talking about positive parenting. So when you talk about positive parenting, what's the key, or positive discipline / positive parenting? What's the key issue here? I mean, what's the key to eliciting the behaviors that you want from a child?
I think teaching them and demonstrating to them what kind of behaviors that you want is the most important thing that you can do with your children. I think also having kind of your go-to types of discipline that work for you and your family is really important, because obviously when a child is displaying a behavior that's undesirable, it's a stressful situation for parents. Whether you're out, you know, in public or you're in your home, it tends to be stressful. And so oftentimes when parents are not prepared for that situation, they react out of anger instead of having a plan. So one of the most important things, I think, is for parents to have a plan on how they want to discipline their child.
And to know in advance, have it thought through.
Right.
But one of the keys that I've read about and thought about quite a bit is, it strikes me that for positive, so-called positive parenting to take place, it really must be based in a positive relationship that's been slowly and carefully built between the child and the parent. Because to really elicit positive behavior, one would hope that the child will want to please the parent and want to sustain that kind of bond and positive relationship. I mean, that isn't sufficient. There need to be boundaries mm-hmm. set and all of the rest. But do you agree?
I do. And that's why I think that, you know, parenting from the beginning, even when you have a newborn and an infant, you're beginning to start to develop a relationship with that child, your infant or baby, that's going to impact them throughout their lives. It's really important right from the beginning.
So when you say get ready, be prepared, give us some examples of the kinds of things or tips that you would say to parents when mm-hmm. it comes to things like positive discipline.
I often go back to the top 10 principles of discipline that were outlined by Dr. Kersey, who's a doctor of education, and she published a book on this about 10 years ago. I have my kind of armamentarium of what I use in my own home, and I tend to recommend these things in my practice as well. A couple of the things that I really like, one would be the what she calls the incompatible alternative principle. So if you have a child who's, you know, acting up when you're, say, out at the grocery store, you give the child another idea of something to do that's completely incompatible with them throwing a temper tantrum on the floor.
Give me an example.
So say you have the child who's about to throw themselves on the floor, and you're shopping and you have your shopping list. You give that child the job or the task of going to get 6 oranges and 3 apples, where they actually have to concentrate on something else rather than have the temper tantrum.
So in a sense, there's a distraction factor.
A distraction.
You move them away to something positive, mm-hmm. something they can get rewarded for, in a sense, from that behavior that's undesirable.
Yeah, and I think something triggers in their brains when you give them that incompatible alternative principle, because you can't do that and throw the temper tantrum. One of the other things that I really like, and I use this probably every day in my own home, is the timer says it's time principle. So setting a timer often helps with transitions for children, and I really like using this. So, for example, I'll set the timer and say, so when the timer goes off, you're going to need to put away your books. Or when the timer goes off, we know it's time to go upstairs.
You can almost giving it, it's almost, you're almost giving it an impersonal, impartial.
Right.
It's not setting up a confrontation. Mom says, therefore child resists, but rather we're just going to set the timer. And when the timer says it's time,
right.
it's time to go.
Exactly. And that's why the timer says it's time. So it's very objective. And it also works with kids. You know, if you're going to allow them a short period of time with media, which we in general discourage them to have a lot of screen time. But if you're going to give them a short period of screen time, it discourages them saying, just 1 more minute, or can I just finish the game? So it helps with that as well.
Do you also recommend things like a warning? Like, for example, I see the timer's only got another minute on it, to give them almost a way of preparing for those transitions before the actual cutoff time.
I do. I usually give, for younger kids, I think just the 2-minute warning usually works with them. So that's the early elementary and the preschool kids, giving them a 2-minute warning, but keeping it very simple and, again, objective. It's 2 minutes, and that, you know, and then that's it. There's no discussion until the timer goes off.
How about in safety situations where it's clear that you really must intervene?
Those situations are a little bit different. So in those situations, I think you have to act quickly. And again, it's good to still have a kind of a plan in mind for what you're going to do if your child is doing something that's unsafe. In most situations like that, unfortunately, you end up having to kind of remove the child from the situation quickly, and that's okay.
How about explaining things? This is something I keep coming through and things I've read in the very little bit of time we have left. How much explanation, and obviously it depends on the age and the ability of the child to understand, but do you advocate for explaining, I know that you're angry, but we have to do this, or I know that, in other words, some explanation along with behavioral changes.
And definitely. I think it's important to acknowledge where the child's coming from and say that you understand that they're upset about something, but still carry on with the plan so that they understand what you're trying to teach them and that you model that behavior so you get a good response the next time.
And consistently do so.
Consistently. And that's one of the big things that I think that's difficult for parents is maintaining consistency between all the different caregivers, between homes, between the teachers, between even the parents sometimes. But the consistency within yourself and also the different caregivers is really important.
So there needs to be good communication then amongst caregivers, partners in
yes,
parenting.
Absolutely.
So that everyone's on the same page. You know, we could go on and on. Unfortunately, we've run out of time, but this is so interesting and so important. I thank you so much for coming in and sharing your perspective on all of these things. And maybe you'll come back again and we can talk more.
Thank you very much for
really
having me.
Great.
Yeah.
My guest has been Dr. Alicia Pekarsky. She's assistant professor of pediatrics at Upstate Medical University, board certified child abuse pediatrician, as well as a general pediatrician at Upstate Scalasano Children's Hospital, McMahon Ryan Child Advocacy Center, and University Pediatric and Adolescent Center. I'm Linda Cohen. You're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.